Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the BICOM podcast. I'm Roni Gazit, and I'm delighted to be joined by David Makovsky. David, thank you for joining us.
Delighted to be with you, Roni.
So just a brief background on David. He is the Ziegler Distinguished Fellow at the D.C.-based Washington Institute for Near East Policy and the director of the Project on Arab-Israel Relations. He is the co-author of a number of books, but one specifically published last fall, co-authored with Dennis Ross, called Be Strong and of Good Courage, How Israel's Most Important Leaders Shaped Its Destiny. And I would encourage all of our listeners to pick up a copy of that book if they haven't done so already. And he also has a podcast of his own called Decision Points, which tells the story of the U.S.-Israel relationship. So I'd encourage all our listeners, again, to check that out wherever they hear their podcasts, and to also check out David's website, which is davidmakovsky.com. And between 2013 and 2014, he worked in the office of then U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, serving as a senior advisor to the Special Envoy for Israeli-Palestinian Negotiations. So drawing on your expertise on U.S.-Israel relations and your experience working for the former Secretary of State, it'd be great to start off discussing Pompeo's, you know, six-hour trip to Israel this week, and perhaps why it is, maybe you can give us some background, why he made this trip on short notice for a very short period of time during this global pandemic.
Okay, thank you, Roni. It's great to be with you guys again at BICOM, and I hope everyone is in good health and in good spirits during these most challenging of times. In terms of the Pompeo visit, I think, you know, there's the kind of the outward agenda, which was to update Israel on Iran. There have been some concerns on China about China's role in, as a finalist in a big water desalination plan and some other projects on Israeli infrastructure. And clearly, look, the issue of Iran is very critical for Israel, for the United States, for Pompeo personally, who's been one of the spearheads of the maximal pressure movement. The U.S. is, you know, has certainly prioritized the Iran nuclear issue, and which has been certainly, you know, subject to intense interest and scrutiny in the U.S. and in Europe. I would say, though, the issue of Israel applying its sovereignty to portions of the West Bank is a thorny issue that I think Pompeo wanted to handle in a delicate manner. First of all, from 2015 to 2020, the United States, when it came to Israel, was dealing with Prime Minister Netanyahu. He was the prime minister, and he was usually the foreign minister, too, if I recall, for a good portion of that period. This is a new government that's supposed to be sworn in today, and now Thursday as we tape this, and looks like we'll be delayed now till Sunday.
To Sunday, yeah.
Due to some squabbling over portfolio distribution and within the Likud. But basically, now you're going to have a broader government. And Pompeo doesn't really know Benny Gantz. They call him the alternative prime minister, the defense minister, or Gabi Ashkenazi, the foreign minister. There's no personal connection there. And so this was something I think he felt he couldn't do on the phone. He wants to establish a rapport with this, you know, new part of Israel, a new part of an Israeli coalition that he hasn't dealt with. And he really wants to take their temperature on the issue of application of sovereignty, often just referred to as annexation. And, you know, you have to do a little tea leaf reading here a bit, because they're very careful not to present any discord, but it's clear that Pompeo wants a more cautious approach. While Prime Minister Netanyahu was keen on trying to push this through the cabinet and maybe even the Knesset on July 1st, which is only 6 weeks away, why is he so, you know, why is he in such a rush? Because I think he's fearful of a U.S. November election, whereby a new president, President Biden, who has said, you know, he's against annexation. So he wants to move up the decision-making as early as he can. He wants Trump to also do the heavy lifting with the Arab states, Jordan, Egypt, the Gulf, to make their case, and is afraid that if he waits till September, the rigors of an American election general campaign will overwhelm everything. It's clear that I think Pompeo, by taking the pulse of Gantz and Ashkenazi, has come to the view that there are more voices here in Israel. And it's not just Netanyahu's voice. And I think he wants to take that back to Trump, and he wants to be able to factor that into the U.S. timetable. While he keeps saying it's his decision, if you look at some of the background or comments of American officials on the plane, you know, they're saying, hey, we want to be sure there's adequate time to do this. Pompeo made an allusion to various stakeholders, and so he doesn't want to be seen at odds with Netanyahu at all, given their close relationship. But at the same time, he doesn't want America to rush into something where this is not well thought out and there's going to be a lot of blowback. So how this translates, it's not clear. Whether this green light becomes a yellow light, it seems to be where the U.S. is heading. But, you know, we'll need to see. I hope in the next 24 hours or so, 48 hours, we'll get a better sense of more details. But I think taking that pulse of the two people he doesn't know, trying to create a chemistry with each of them, he met them each one-on-one in separate meetings.
Right.
I think that's a good start.
David, thank you so much for that great overview. And perhaps we can just flesh out one of the points that you started with, which is Iran. And in October, the arms embargo is due to end. And you mentioned, obviously, the timing with the November election. But do you sense that the U.S. is going to take any steps on this issue, if it was something that came up in the meeting between Pompeo and Netanyahu?
I don't know. We don't know enough details. I do think the Iran issue is really important for the United States. I think to Pompeo personally, he's someone who, according to news reports, he was someone also on the Soleimani issue, had a certainly had a point of view there as well. He's right. Always prioritized this issue. And I tend to think that they will try to use their time to the extent they can. And they see in Netanyahu, a kindred spirit. So I wouldn't minimize what they do. But in terms of what he raised with Netanyahu, we just don't know.
So then moving on, obviously, to bigger point that I think you spent most of your time talking about with me just now, and probably the conversation that the secretary was having with the Israelis that he met with, which is the Trump plan and the annexation, the application of Israeli sovereignty. And we know that there's this joint U.S.-Israel mapping team working out the details, the contours, you know, the scope of what this might look like. So from what you read of this situation, do you think their recommendations will be for something limited, a partial annexation, or are we talking about most of Area C, which is where the Israeli settlements are in the West Bank?
No, it's look, I think the upper limit is the 30% of the Trump plan. So that would be like the equivalent of half of Area C, because Area C is 60. So this would be half of Area C, yes. What's unclear is, think that for Netanyahu, everything is Trump. And if he has Trump, he goes for the full Trump plan. That means annexing, or de facto annexing, up to 130 settlements. 15 of the 130 would be as enclaves within a Palestinian state. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, this is the upper limit. Now, what we don't know is to what extent it's like Trump, as he is on everything, on a lot of issues, is carve out a maximalist opening position and then negotiate downward. And Pompeo says, now we're waiting for the Palestinian counteroffer, but the Palestinians will say, we're not legitimizing that counteroffer by making a counteroffer. I don't know if, you know, they're actually might be facilitating a move on annexation by not having a counteroffer. That's the one thing that could slow things down.
Yeah.
So we don't know, Roni, if this is just an opening bid, and then say, look, let's see what Ashkenazi and Gantz of Blue and White say. even though they don't have a veto under the coalition deal, but they're only going to be consulted. Does King of Jordan, King Abdullah, does his role make a difference? Does the Gulf states make a difference? Does the Democrats and the Jewish community in America make a difference? So we don't know to what extent that 130 places is a way of tactical, of negotiating downward. And that includes the Jordan Valley, which King Abdullah cares about. His prime minister said it would put the peace treaty in a deep freeze. Don't know enough. What I'm wondering is if the Pompeo visit was to say, listen, we need more time here. This is complicated. Everyone has got a role. The Arab states are starting to weigh in. Let us take more time. And that's what I assume Pompeo was coming with, to tell Netanyahu, let's get off this July 1st deadline. One hand, he keeps saying this is an Israeli decision, but the Israeli coalition deal says it has to be done with full agreement with the United States. So Pompeo was crucial in this regard. And Jared Kushner, as, to the extent they advised the president, and we assume the president is not exactly, how do I say this, well-versed in all the nuances. So a recommendation from Pompeo and Kushner is like almost like talking to the president. Now, it could be you've got David Friedman, the American ambassador in Israel. He clearly has an opinion. But the U.S. view until now is to say, look, you're interested in annexation. We get that. You want to front load it. We're interested in our plan. And, you know, but for Netanyahu to reaffirm the plan is not a heavy lift because he's already said he's for the plan. But what we don't know is how much breaks does the administration want to apply? The mapping committee that you mentioned, is that reminding people how these are complicated issues? You know, are you talking about annexing a settlement, built up area? Are you talking about it zoning? These are different lines. How's that going to end? And Roni, you know about this from your work on maps. So, I mean, this is...
Yeah, I think on that note, I'd encourage our listeners to check out Settlements and Solutions to really see this stuff and understand it. Just Google it and you'll find a great interactive website on the Washington Institute.
It's about the interface between settlements and peace plans. And so I think that, you know, there's... The deeper you get into it, the more complexity you see. And I kind of think that's what Pompeo, for him to get out of the corona, you know, this is the first only trip, you know, it's like, oh my God, this isn't handled carefully. This could be a train wreck. Right. And so I think that Pompeo seemed to be flashing some yellow lights and was trying to take the pulse of Gantz and Ashkenazi in this regard. And some may argue that Pompeo, by focusing on those two, he was almost empowering them and saying, like, you have a veto because our whole approach is to have unity of Israel. And so we don't want to just to do this with the Likud. We want to broaden it. And so it's interesting if Pompeo was almost creating new friendships here to try to get a more balanced picture of what is advisable and what is feasible in a short period of time.
Right. So you've alluded to this, the timing of this stuff, and the vote in the Israeli Knesset can happen as early as July. But at the same time, there's the U.S. presidential election in November, which you've also spoken to. So something that we at BICOM have been talking about is the speculation of a distinction between a declaration, which, you know, could happen in the summer, and then an implementation, which could be farther away. Do you think that that type of approach to this is reasonable? And perhaps maybe also taking into consideration, I mean, we've talked about just the U.S. side, understandably, because we're focusing on Pompeo's visit, but the EU and a lot of the comments that we've seen come out of the EU, the member states, the UK, different governing bodies within the United Kingdom, of, you know, warnings and severe ramifications for any type of annexation or application of sovereignty. To what extent do you think they're taking, Israeli decision makers are taking that into consideration?
I would like to believe that Gantz and Ashkenazi, who's going to be in charge of Israel's foreign affairs, and Gantz, who, you know, is, both of these guys are former chiefs of staff of the IDF, and they always thought, like, okay, what's the broader environment here that you're operating in? So I tend to think if Netanyahu was more Trump-centric, These two guys are not. So I think that's going to be a factor. It'll be interesting to see to what extent the Israeli security establishment weighs in, the IDF, where both of them were ahead of the Israel Defense Forces, or the Shin Bet that is worried about an outbreak of violence in the West Bank or Gaza. Gaza is basically a de facto truce with Hamas. So I tend to think that this is not just a political issue. There's a national security issue and an issue of Israeli foreign policy that they will have to weigh in on both of these. They have to weigh in on these different issues. I think Europe is fascinating because I think the Netanyahu view, it tends to be, look, Eastern Europe is very friendly to Israel, maybe even some of the Mediterranean countries, given the natural gas issues. So there will be no consensus in the EU on economic sanctions, given these differences. But, you know, the more you drill into this, too, and I'm sure you at BICOM that are much more closer to this than I am, you know, there's individual countries, and individual countries could still have policies. And they, you know, say, hey, in the Middle East, it takes more than one to be unilateral. We could be unilateral as individuals. Do we recognize Palestine? Do we take economic steps on Horizon 2020, which is an important science program for Israel for R&D? And here it only takes one or two countries to make a difference. So I think it's a you know, if you're an Israeli decision maker, you've got to think about an array of places, of actors, stakeholders. You can't just say, look, the EU, there's no consensus. Who cares about Europe? It's more complex. You don't want anything that's going to give a boost to BDS or to the ICC action. There's just so many dimensions here, and you can't just write it off by saying, as long as Israel has Eastern Europe, then Europe is meaningless in this regard. And so I don't think that's a fair assessment. And I think, you know, there are going to be enough people at the top of the Israeli system and in their bureaucracy and in their national security apparatus that's going to flag this for the decision makers.
So we see that within the Trump plan itself, there is this end goal of a Palestinian state. But as you've mentioned, and as we see, they're not getting involved in negotiations at pretty much any level. Do you hold out any hope that they might return to negotiations, or do you feel like they're also eyeing this November U.S. presidential election as perhaps a shift in the dynamics that we've seen from the Trump presidency?
Look, there's no doubt that Jared Kushner and I think Pompeo's view is, you know, this is an opening position on the Trump peace plan. We want the Palestinians to make a counteroffer. I think, you know, that they would like that, but I don't think they think it's going to happen. And I tend to think that their view, having talked to one of their top people at the very top, I tend to think that their belief is the Palestinians will only come around if Trump is reelected in November, because then they'll have to deal with the United States for another 4 years. And that will be a whole new kettle of fish. So to the extent that they think that they'll either have to reconcile to the Trump plan, or it will, the U.S. and Israel will impose it, essentially. So I tend to think that it's the second term for them that is the trigger for trying to see if the Palestinians reconsider their boycott, which began in December of 2017. Whether they're right or not, you know, is to be seen. But I don't think they, you know, they would like to have a counteroffer. And I think some would say, look, maybe the threat of annexation is going to bring that counteroffer. But I, you know, they don't know that. And it could be the Palestinian politics and the age of Abbas. And he's so dug in on this issue that he won't change on that.
Yeah. And do you think it's also fair to see that if it's not a Trump administration come November, but, you know, Biden in the White House, that will shift their strategy too, and we might see more engagement from them?
No doubt the Biden administration has said that it's committed to a two-state solution. Right. It is true that Corona and other issues in the world, like Iran and China and a bunch of other questions, are going to be more at the top of that list. This isn't, let's say, where George Mitchell was named on the second day of the Obama administration. Yeah. It's a different period we're in now. So I think while Biden's instincts are to want to be engaged for two states, the Palestinians, I think, would need to also show that their positions are moving from some of the positions of the past and are more realistic. They always want to be kind of pure in their positions, but it hasn't exactly worked out that way, you know, and the Arab states have found a way to deal with Israel under the table for the most part with the Gulf, but because of there's a convergence on thwarting Iran's nuclear ambitions, they care about Israeli technology. So, you know, I think the Palestinians will clearly find in the Biden administration more receptivity for negotiations, but they should not assume that the world is waiting just for this. There's just so much else going on. And I think they're going to have to get the Biden administration's attention in a certain way that their views are genuine towards making progress, and it's worthy of American attention, given all the competition that's out there for being at the top of the priority list.
So perhaps we can end with one of the first things you mentioned, which is this other issue bubbling under U.S.-Israel relations, which is Israel's relationship with China and their investment in these large infrastructure projects. It's not something that we've really seen the U.S. address publicly. Pompeo did make a comment on it. How concerned is the U.S. about that? Do you see Israel acquiescing to the U.S.'s demands despite their commitments to the Chinese?
No, I think it's important. It's one of those issues that's kind of been under the radar and has not really gotten attention. But this administration sees China, as often not just a competitor, but as a malevolent actor in certain regards. And mm-hmm. They feel that China's making all this progress in the world with their Belt and Road initiatives to draw in all these third world countries and the like, and in a way to gain influence. With Israel, the U.S. has an expectation that there would be a more of a savviness and looking at the big picture and not just saying, oh, when it comes to the Haifa port, this Chinese company will do it cheaper. Haifa port is where the 6th Fleet of the United States comes in for port calls. This water desal plant is near a big Air Force base of Israel. And I tend to think the U.S. has been making this case quietly from what we hear, that in many meetings, the U.S. has raised this to the top of its list of priorities in bilateral meetings with their Israeli counterparts. And I tend to think, to paraphrase President Trump, asked to choose between the two, for Israel, it's clearly America first.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you so much for your time and for this great conversation. I know I've greatly benefited from it. I hope our listeners have as well. And I'd encourage everyone again to check out David's podcast, Decision Points, pick up a copy of his book. We all have plenty of time now in the comfort of our own homes to do reading and listening. So thank you again, David, and stay healthy, everyone, and stay safe.
Thank you very much, Roni. It's always a delight to be with you.